So the Brexit chaos continues. Theresa May, the Prime Minister, well, she won't be the Prime Minister forever. She's decided she will go if that means she can get support for her Brexit deal. She said, I'm prepared to leave this job earlier than I intended in order to do what is right for our country and our party. But the DUP, they say no.
I believe that at the moment in the House of Commons there's a lot of conversations going on around a range of deals. I think it has been made clear by Parliament that they are not in favour of a no-deal scenario. But what we can't agree to is something that threatens the Union, which has a strategic risk to the Union, because for us, in the Democratic Unionist Party, the Union will always come first.
Let's speak to the Tory MP, Andrew Bridgen. Morning to you, Andrew.
Good morning.
Good morning. And the Vice Chair of the Norland Food and Drink Association, Declan Billington. Good morning to you, Declan.
Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning. So, Andrew, where on earth does this leave the country now? What happens next?
Well, I think the Prime Minister will try and bring her withdrawal agreement back for meaningful vote three. Just when you thought it was safe to go back in the chamber. I think that'll be back tomorrow. But then that's if the Speaker allows it, because he's pretty adamant yesterday that he's not going to allow it to come back again.
You're a member of the ERG. Are you disappointed in Jacob Rees-Mogg doing a complete U-turn?
These are very important issues. The ERG is not a really whipped organisation. It's a collection of people who want to deliver Brexit. And it's for every MP of every party to decide on these huge issues which way they're going to vote. And they've got to better look themselves in the eye. And more importantly, they've got to be able to defend their decisions to their electorate, ultimately. And it's all for them to make their own decisions. I've got the highest regard for Jacob and the rest of my colleagues in the House of Commons.
Well, you might have regard for him, but he is disappointed that he's now prepared to back Theresa May's deal. I think he caveated it, to be fair to him, last night, if the DUP back it.
That seems a very strange thing to me. I would never abdicate which way I was voting by which way someone else was voting. That for me, is unusual. I mean, what if the way someone else is voting, how does that affect the way I'm going to vote? But I will not be voting for the withdrawal agreement if it comes back tomorrow. I'll be voting against for the third time.
So where does this leave business? Where does this leave people trying to prepare for what they're going to do with their stock, whether they're going to make investments?
The way we should have left on no deal tomorrow night, a managed no deal. £4.2 billion has been spent by the government. We're passing all the statutory instruments to deliver that. There's 9,000 civil servants have been working on so-called no-deal planning. Business has been warned and they've got stock in. And if you want to end the uncertainty, let's leave with no deal. And that's much cleaner than going out with the withdrawal agreement. And people will say, well, you know, political expedience, let's vote for the withdrawal agreement. That'll solve it. Well, it won't, because that is a terrible deal. And also, when the withdrawal bill comes back, if it was passed, the agreement in Parliament, that will get amended by all the people who want customs union and whatever other variation of Brexit they want. So the real only way to get out cleanly, without amendments, because there'll be nothing to amend, would be on a managed no deal. Then we immediately offer the EU GATT 24, Article 24, which is reciprocal tariff-free trade, while we sort out a detailed free trade agreement, and we'd have 10 years on that. If we sign the withdrawal agreement, what fundamentally to me is abhorrent about it is that for an indeterminate period, we'll be, for the first time in our country's history, we'll be taking our laws, a large number of our laws, and supremacy of our court by a foreign power over which we have no control, and there is no end to that under that agreement. It's not a withdrawal agreement. It's actually a treaty in perpetuity between the UK and the European Union.
Declan Billington, you are Vice Chair of the Norland Food and Drinks Association. What would you say to Andrew Bridgen this morning?
Well, Andrew used the word managed. You cannot manage a no deal. 2 years ago, I talked to his colleagues in London in various positions and ministerial posts saying if we were going to leave without a deal, we need several years to manage a transition because we need to build the factories for the products that go south and they'll not go south through the tariffs. We need to reposition our business. You cannot reposition a seven-year transition into one night. That's the first thing. The second thing is we're very clear from what the UK has published in its no-deal tariff schedule that anyone who works in a factory can now expect their employment to be threatened because they're giving free access to the UK market, the only remaining market we will have access to without tariffs in a no-deal, when you consider the rest of Europe, that we will be allowing people to pay the living wage. People who pay 10% of the wages that we pay to our people having free access to the UK market overnight. If you want to manage an exit, you need years to manage and to restructure. You do not do it overnight. The comment about Article 24 of the GATT has been refuted many times by many people. The key thing in that article basically says both parties need to be substantially down the road of agreeing a deal and therefore they agree to set aside tariffs. Europe has said what the deal is in terms of the withdrawal. Are they really going to step back and allow free trade with the rest of Europe on the basis that the UK wouldn't agree to a deal? Because actually you can only do this if both parties agree to it, Europe and the UK. I don't see Europe agreeing to that proposal.
Are you angry?
Of course Europe are going to agree to that proposal. They've got a €95 billion a year surplus trade with the UK. We're the customers.
And I hear what you're saying. Your approach is very simple. You will open the whole of the UK to cheap products and expect Europe to allow the UK to trade with Europe. The whole of the UK will become a backdoor for cheap goods and goods produced at different standards from Europe. There's no way Europe, who have tried to manage their single market for the last 20-odd years, is going to open the floodgates via the UK to the world to backdoor every single product that is 10, 15, 20% cheaper than Europe because they don't pay the European wages, they don't commit to the European welfare of animals, they don't commit to the environment. There's no way Europe will allow a free trade agreement with the UK when the UK is opening its floodgates to the rest of the world for cheap goods.
But there's full traceability on food, so that is not an issue in exporting. And that is the biggest part of our manufacturing industry in the UK is food processing. And there's full traceability to source there.
Yeah. And Europe is suing the UK at the moment for its failure to implement the existing tariff code on imports from China. Europe is also concerned about events like Horsegate and other ones where the UK continually has shown challenges around food security and food safety. And the concept...
We've got the highest food standards in Europe, if not the world.
That's a very good point you make.
Well, let's let... No, hold on.
Well,
let's
I've Andrew been finish. I've been out to Holland. I was in the food industry for 22 years, and when I looked at competitors in Holland, also in the EU, under the same rules as the factory I was running, and there was no chance we were ever going to be able to export to mainland Europe because their standards were not anywhere near the standards that we were holding up in the UK, and we wouldn't be able to compete with them. You've got food companies with product going straight, highly sensitive food product straight, which would be eaten uncooked, where people were not wearing protective footwear coming in off the street. I mean, it's just laughable.
So, Declan, what preparations is your members making for the next few months? Like, what are you doing the next few years? How are you preparing?
For the last several months, HMRC has done the tour of the UK explaining what the world will look like in a no-deal scenario. They were here yesterday. Right, 2 days before, in theory, we were going to leave. Now we're talking about 12th of April or 22nd of May. Telling us what the policy is for Northern Ireland that was only decided 3 weeks ago. So first question is, how do business prepare when we don't know what the government policy is? How do you prepare when you don't know whether the UK market is going to be open to cheap goods around the world for people who earn 10% of what we earn to do the same thing? So in answer to preparation, stock has been built. Businesses are trying to understand what regulations they need to work with, in particular export rules to export into Europe, if they can. Agri-food won't be able to because of the tariffs. Manufacturing could, but they need to comply with all sorts of declarations for export into Europe. And they've only found out in the last 2 days officially what to expect. There has been notifications. You read the notifications. Northern Ireland is a special case, and we'll get back to you.
Well,
are you prepared against
under WTO rules, it's illegal if there's no regulatory changes or regulatory reasons for non-tariff barriers to be introduced. Well, on the day we leave the European Union, our regulations are absolutely in line with the European Union because we've just transposed all of their regulations into UK law. So
Agreed. There
is no reason for any non-tariff barriers. In fact, the EU have said they're going to not make any difference on the borders for up to 9 months straight away to let things settle down.
OK, let's take that point. The UK has published its tariff codes for a no deal and of quota. So we're going to see substantial floods of non-UK goods circulating in the UK economy. And unless Europe imposed checks at the border, how do they make sure that Brazilian meat, Argentinian meat, New Zealand products that came into the UK, very low tariffs, don't charge across the border into Europe?
But you know that the food industry has to have full traceability to source anyway. There will be customers of food industries in the UK who don't want that product. They want something different. Well, I mean, it's exactly the same. If I'm running a restaurant chain, I say, look, I don't want any of that cheap Brazilian beef. I want this beef. I want it from Aberdeen Angus.
It has to
be there to demonstrate those. Exactly the same, isn't it? I mean, that's
what you say, and not the truth. The UK consumer believes it's on a UK shelf, it's safe, regardless of its origin. There's a lot of
It probably is safe, but it may be not that they...
I worked in the industry during BSE, right? And the time BSE hit, not a kilo of beef shifted for 2 weeks. The supermarkets went on promotion. It was sold at half price. And people who were being told there was a risk in this stuff bought it like there was no tomorrow. So you can't turn around...
Well, the BSE crisis, remember, that we were actually under EU rules and regulations, and that happened here.
Yeah, you're right. It's just how well or how badly they're implemented in the country that it happens in.
Andrew, some of your colleagues in the ERG are saying they do not like the Prime Minister's deal. Jacob Rees-Mogg is an example. Boris Johnson is another example. They do not like Theresa May's deal, but they feel if they do not back it, this is Boris I'm talking about now, we may not get Brexit at all.
I understand that risk, and that clearly...
Do you think not getting Brexit is a real possibility now?
Well, I think that there's got to be the risk, but the deal is so bad, and ties the UK potentially indefinitely, that I think that's a definite. So I will always put a risk against a definite. And there's no doubt about it. In history, I do not want my name going down that I signed our country into vassalage indefinitely with the European Union when people voted to take back control. And there'd be euphoria if we signed the deal and people thought, well, it's all over. We're out of the European Union. Brexit is sorted. We've got this transition period. But it will quickly unravel when the public realise what their politicians have signed them up to.
Here's James and Derry. Morning, James.
Good morning, Stephen. It's a point to you, Andrew, and I just listen to these voices every morning telling us how what we have to expect and how we won't care. Nothing will happen. I understand, Andrew, but Andrew doesn't live here. Andrew doesn't live in Cross McGlen. He doesn't live in Derry, 2 miles from the border where I live. He doesn't live in Balik. And he has to understand when we are told and pontificated by people of the ERG, by the like of Jacob Rees-Mogg, who probably is worth £200-300 million, that everything will be okay. It is very easy to be told that. It's very easy to tell someone on PIP or on someone on the dole, Sean, it'll be great by a multimillionaire. A multimillionaire who wouldn't even pay bedroom tax on a 200-room mansion that him and his
wife... Hold on a minute. No.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah,
sorry.
Well...
He does live in a 200-room mansion.
Well, he might live in a 200-room mansion. I don't know how many rooms he's got, but he was working with...
I've stayed at his house. He's got a very nice house.
He was working within the rooms. He was lawfully working within the rooms.
I think it's about six bedrooms.
Right. His wife has an ancestral mansion.
Well, whether his wife's got an ancestral mansion or not, it's got nothing to do with Brexit.
Every single day... Stephen, excuse me, you butt in every single day when I'm...
I'm butting in because you can't tell untruths about people.
An untruth?
Yes.
Are you calling me a liar?
I am telling you that I very much doubt Jacob Rees-Mogg has a 200-bedroom mansion.
His wife has got an ancestral mansion.
Fine, whoop the doop. Let's talk about Brexit.
Right, okay.
I wouldn't fancy
Andrew,
the heating bill.
Will you, Andrew, will you stand on the border? Will you stand and protect the border when PSNI officers are asked to stand and protect the border? Will you be one of the custom officers? No, you won't. You'll be sitting in a lovely, wee, quiet constituency that you live in, and probably in the middle of England, not caring a jot about anybody that lives in this island.
I assure you, there'll be no hard border on the island of Ireland, whatever the outcome of Brexit. I am. The UK will never do it. We've assured that.
Could you give me your credentials that'll tell me that there will? You assure me. Please give me your credentials.
I'm giving you my assurance that I will never ever vote for anything that creates a hard border on the island of Ireland. There will be no hard border on the island of Ireland. Neither the UK government, the Republic of Ireland, or the EU will ever put a hard border on the island.
Can I tell you, as an Irish Republican, there will never be a hard border on this island again. Ever. We will not allow you
we don't want
the border in our country.
Nobody wants there to be. Nobody wants a hard border on the island of Ireland.
You sat there and talked about getting sandwiches in Holland. Do you realise how important this is to the people of this island? And you're talking about getting a sandwich on cooked in Holland. That is just the kind of talk that drives these people mad. We have 10 DUP...
Well, I was getting into
MPs.
A detailed discussion on food safety with an academic.
Yeah, you were. But to be fair, to Andrew, that was the context with which he was talking about the sandwiches and food.
Yeah, I understand.
But now the context, Andrew. Yeah. James is putting to you, Andrew, do you understand the potential
outcome of political instability
in Northern Ireland? And what political instability in Northern Ireland in the past has cost people their lives, Andrew?
Absolutely, and we never want to go back to those days again. But there's no appetite, no thought of ever doing anything that's going to create a hard border on the island of Ireland. It is the intransigence of the European Union. This myth about the hard border requirement, and I keep telling you on this programme, and I've said on many others, before the Irish border issue became a political stick with which to beat the UK during these negotiations, there was a joint declaration by HMRC Northern Ireland and Customs south of the border that the current infrastructure was quite capable of dealing with Brexit across the border, whatever
Andrew,
the outcome.
Can I just correct
and that,
you
that was
point,
soon buried as soon as it became
Andrew,
politically expedient to use the border.
Though, it's
please,
not just
Andrew,
about
one
customs.
Point. Can I correct you on one point? It is not an Irish border. It never was an Irish border. It was a British border imposed on the island of Ireland. Why do you call it an Irish border?
Okay.
No one in Ireland ever wanted to be separated. It was imposed upon us.
James,
you talk about the intransigence of Europe. What about the intransigence of the British government?
And that is a discussion for
another
day, isn't it?
Even it is for another day, but it is not an Irish border.
Okay. James, thank you. Morning
thank
to you.
You very
our
much.
Business and Economics Editor, John Campbell, is joining us now. John, the impact, good morning. The impact on Northern Ireland of where we're currently at. All of these indicative votes voted down last night. They were just indicative votes. They weren't binding. Yeah. The Prime Minister announcing she would go if her deal got through. The DUP saying, no, they're still not supporting her deal. What's all the impact on Northern Ireland? Let's focus on here.
Yeah, well, I suppose, as Declan would tell you, it's just this continuing sense of uncertainty because we're either about 15 days or about 2 weeks away or about 60 days away from Brexit, and we still don't know exactly what's going to happen. And the impact on business is uncertainty and therefore a reluctance to invest. And we see that the last figures we had from Ulster Bank, where they survey businesses every month, it did suggest that there was, at this moment of Brexit uncertainty, there's effectively a pause in investment going on from companies. Companies don't want to really hire or invest until they see the lie of the land. And we know that all through this process, all the various research we've seen has suggested that if there are bad impacts from Brexit, they'll be worse and longer lasting in Northern Ireland. That's something which the Secretary of State suggested yesterday. Right in the heart of this, right in the heart of the politics of this, is Northern Ireland and the DUP.
And businesses who are trying to prepare, John, what have they been doing? How can you prepare for this?
It depends on the sort of business you have. First of all, you can look at your supply chain and say, right, where am I getting, say, all my inputs from? Is there a danger that I would end up having to pay tariffs on those inputs? Could I face new checks and controls on those inputs? So then you start thinking, well, is there a supplier that I can get that's not in the EU, that's within the UK, where I don't have that? You're also looking at, you know, the markets you're selling into, what the tariff impacts could be. And some businesses have done major preparations, particularly those what we would call regulated businesses, those who face lots of regulations. So Almac, biggest homegrown pharmaceutical firm, they've effectively set up a parallel factory in Dundalk. So, you know, that's something which really their customers demanded very early on, saying, we need to be clear that whatever happens, you will still be able to sell your products in the single market after Brexit. So for the local companies, that's probably the biggest investment that has been made, the most sort of dramatic investment that's been made. We also know, you know, we were talking to Norbrook, another big pharmaceutical firm, quite recently, and they've been stockpiling. So they're making sure that they have, I think, about 3 months' worth of their products inside the single market warehoused. So if there's any disruption to trade, that they can actually continue to service that market after Brexit. So, you know, whenever you're building up stock like that, that there's a certain cost to that. That's, you know, it has an impact on your balance sheet. But the impact for a company like Norbrook, for example, could be that they've taken all the steps that they could take, but in the event of a no deal, there would be a risk that stuff that coming out of that factory after Brexit might not be seen as being EU compliant anymore, an extremist. That's what could happen. So they've done all they can to mitigate those risks, but you can only mitigate so far. And then Agri-Food, they have the biggest issues, because
we're hearing from quite a few farmers today, John.
There's only so much that they can do. We heard this from Michael Gove yesterday. So we know what the UK government plan is, that in event of no deal, they say, right, we're not going to charge any tariffs on Irish goods coming into Northern Ireland. So all those food and animal products, they'll continue to flow in as they do today. But there's the high possibility that goods from Northern Ireland going another direction into the Republic would face tariffs. So but farmers say, well, and food producers say, well, that's going to be extremely unfair to us, because our products then become much more expensive in the Republic, whereas the products coming from the Republic into the Northern Ireland and the UK, they'll just end up, you know, being at the same price. And Michael Gove admitted yesterday, he's the Secretary of State for Environment in the UK, that would have a significant negative impact on Northern Ireland.
Well, why would we do that? Why would we make it tariff-free for them and they charge us? Why would we do that?
Because the government has said that, as far as they're concerned, that is a unilateral action that they can take to keep their promise that there will be no hardening of the border. So if you think, well, why might you have to have checks at the border to make sure tariffs are paid, to make sure that standards are adhered to, whatever, they're just saying, we wouldn't do any of that at all. We would just keep the border open. But on the EU, then there's the question of, well, what would the EU do on their side of the border? And as it stands, the EU position is that they would impose their normal tariffs on a non-member and have their normal checks. Now, the Irish government hasn't been exactly explicit how those checks would work or where they would take place, but as it stands, that's the EU policy. So it's not an agreement about how the border would work. It's a unilateral decision that the British government have taken, and they hope it would only be a temporary arrangement. They would hope the whole thing would eventually be sorted out politically, but that's the situation that we could be in if there's no deal.
Peter, morning, Peter.
No, Stephen. All right, how are
John,
you?
Sorry, John Campbell. Thank you very much indeed, sir. Thank you. Good morning to you. Go ahead, Peter.
Yeah. Oh, yes. A couple of things. I'd like to speak to DUP. I would just like to ask them how they think they know more than me about farming and business. And did any of them ever run a business, or do they know anything about business? But they're not there. But a couple of observations. I think they've acted out, judging by the no-no-no's last night across the TV screen, and Arlene Foster this morning, no-no-no. The DUP have actually contaminated the British Parliament. That's what they have. But a couple of things now.
And what are you worried about in terms of your farming? Are you a farmer?
Well, I'm literally retired now. I'm in my 80th year, so I'm not going to be doing much farming.
So what do you think farmers have got to be worried about?
Everything. No deal. They've no place to go. Once the border comes, is reclosed again, we just have no place to go. Farmers with cattle, sheep.
Well, the border won't be reclosed, will it?
You can't operate partition without two different countries, which it shouldn't be. Ireland is a separate country. Actually, if they listen to Sunday Politics on BBC on Sunday, Philip Hammond kept talking about Britain will be okay. Britain will be okay. Northern Ireland is not part of Britain. the DUP will have to cotton on that Northern Ireland is part of a 32-county Ireland. It's not separate from Ireland. It's separate from Britain.